And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, and we are checking in live with Dennis Dodd in Tuscaloosa for a very special game week edition of the Doddcast. Dennis, welcome back to the Doddcast. How have you felt the first 2 weeks have started in college football?
You know, with a bang, if you consider what happened Saturday. We already have two of the biggest school jobs in the country maybe open at the end of the year, and we still have, 12 more weeks of ball left in a 14-week season. So, yeah, huge with a bang. And I don't think much changed at the top. We'll know about the Saturday, A&M and Alabama, but I mean, that stood out. The ACC accounting for itself well, I thought. You can pretty much, I think, pencil in Michigan for the Legends or Leaders division. Don't quiz me on that.
Right.
I know who's in it. I just can't tell you the name of it.
Right. It's the one. I know that it's the one with Nebraska and Michigan State.
Yes.
And with Nebraska and Michigan State looking down, Michigan certainly does look like a leader there.
Absolutely, yeah. In a very entertaining team, I might add. They still have to get the defense thing figured out to get back to their full legacy and tradition there. But for the time being, Devin Gardner is probably a Heisman candidate, and we'll just go from there. I think it's been with a bang so far.
You and I exchanged some emails over the weekend, and I wanted to go ahead and start with this, particularly with Texas A&M and Alabama ahead, and just coming off of two very highly publicized performances for South Carolina. First, the opener against North Carolina, a win, and then the loss to Georgia in Athens. And we, Dennis and I, were talking about how strange it is that the fact that teams are scheming away from defensive end Jadeveon Clowney, or the fact that you're trying to keep Johnny Manziel in the pocket. It's almost like a well, duh, no kid. I mean, we're talking about once-in-a-lifetime athletes and every single aspect of their game, even the things that should be common sense, have all of a sudden become a story. And in my in my opinion, this is sort of the bad side of the explosion of college football, because as the popularity has risen and as the television dollars have gone up and the demand in the country has gone up, we have entered a celeb status style of media criticism, and it's very interesting to watch it, because you get frustrated, but clearly it's still delivering results with the fans. Where do you stand on this, and do you see it getting worse, or do you think this is only with Johnny Manziel and Jadeveon Clowney?
No, I think it's the way of the world now, whether it's right or wrong or whether you like it or not. I mean, obviously there's a market for it. People want to read it, that the fact that Jadeveon Clowney is now lashing out at his coaches, maybe. Johnny Manziel has become as much a TMZ sensation as any website or newspaper because of the lines he crosses in entertainment and culture. That, yeah, it's going to be that way. Clowney, I don't know what his level of self-awareness is, but good offensive coordinators usually try to run away from good defensive ends.
Right.
So it's incumbent on them to hustle and chase down those players with the ball. If you get that good, they're not going to run right at you every play. They may try on certain plays, but not every play. And, his comment about moving him around up and down the line, that's exactly what they did in the opener against North Carolina. He opened up over the center and then played, right and left end the rest of the game. There had to be a reason for them keeping him in one place Saturday. I'm not going to question it. But he just has to start playing better. I think I saw today where his stats are exactly what they were a year ago after two games. He's got a sack, he's got three hurries, he's got a couple of tackles for loss, and that's where he was. It was a season in which he had 13 sacks and I think 20-something tackles for loss. But as I've mentioned before, defensive end is a very nuanced position. You can get, you know, you can get three hurries in a game and have a really good game because you're influencing what the offense does. It may run away from you. It may run to another side where it becomes overall easier to defend them. And as far as Manziel goes, it's just, you know, it's off the charts. I talked to Amari Cooper today at the Alabama availability, and I asked him about Johnny Manziel's offseason, and he said, "Well, why? What do you mean?" And I went, "Well, you know, he was investigated by the NCAA. He was thrown out of the Manning passing camp." And he goes, "Oh, I never saw that stuff." And I went, "Oh, come on, Amari. No, I mean, you're not coached up that much." I guess they're really in lockdown mode. But I guess my point is that in the off season his name was trending almost every day. He wasn't doing something. People were reading about what he did, you know, prior to that. So, no, I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Well, just like Johnny Manziel has a camera phone at every party he goes to, we will be having a Johnny Cam on him for that Alabama game, as the SEC on CBS will feature a camera as soon as he hits the field. And I don't know how much they're going to toss to it during the broadcast, but that is the kind of move that is made for a Super Bowl-like event and this Texas A&M Alabama game, because of everything that it means to the sport with Nick Saban and Alabama and their dominance over the last 4 years, and then Johnny Manziel and everything he's done. I mean, this just feels like the, you know, the perfect storm for the sport. What are you anticipating, you know, for the actual game? Like, Dennis, I need you to help me get through the noise. I need you to act like Alabama. You're in Tuscaloosa. Let's eliminate distractions. Let's focus on the process. What are you expecting on the field between the Aggies and the Tide?
Well, first of all, can I say that I think the Johnny Cam's a great idea?
You do?
Absolutely. I want to see when he points at a player, when he taunts a player. I don't want a camera to miss that. I want to see what leads up to it. I want to see what he does. I want to follow him to the sidelines. I think it's a brilliant idea.
All right.
Look, they use it in, I know online, and maybe on the air too, they use it on Notre Dame football games on NBC. And I know they've used it for hockey on NBC too, but be that as it may, this is different. I think this is something that begs to be done. So in the game, somebody just asked me about that today. You know, the 2 weakest points match up against each other. Alabama's offensive line for now and Texas A&M's defensive line, which we know they had a lot of holes to fill in the offseason. Now, I think given 2 weeks that Nick Saban will fix the offensive line, and frankly, the offensive line will fix itself. It's had its pride wounded. It's hearing about it. They will get T.J. Yeldon going. They will protect A.J. McCarron. And I think they'll be okay. I think this game really boils down to the lines of Texas A&M, their ability to stop Alabama, and really a multifaceted offense, if you think about it. I think Amari Cooper's got a chance to be an All-American, and T.J. Yeldon already is a 1,000-yard runner. So you've got that. And then their ability to stop the Alabama defense on their offensive line, which we already know is pretty salty. The one Jokel, the tackle in a matchup, and that leads us obviously to Johnny Manziel.
Right.
Who I am convinced that, and not this is not a revelation, I think they want to make him a pocket passer because he's just less dangerous there, just as Cam Newton was less dangerous as a college player as a pocket passer. He just was. You force guys to throw into a window, it's going to be like that. But having said that, it's easier said than done, because Johnny Manziel, I think part of his talent is when he freelances like that, he doesn't know how the play is going to end up. So if he doesn't know, how does the defense know? And I just point back to that play last year when he fumbled the ball, caught it midair, and still threw to the guy in the end zone for a touchdown. I talked to C.J. Mosley about that, and he said, "Yeah, I blew it. You know, I left my zone, because I started chasing him when that ball came loose and that left it open." Well, that's human nature. You're going to do that when you see a ball come through you.
Right.
So a player like him, they don't have to give him much protection. Now, to run the ball, yes, they're going to have to establish something. But when you got a guy like that and he gets out of contain, you got to account for him. And it takes really less pressure on the offensive line to get stuff done if you've got that plus one quarterback. And a plus one at the football tournament means defense has to account for the quarterback as a runner. And he's the ultimate plus one in college football today. So I just think it boils down to that. It's three areas. Alabama's offensive line, A&M's defense, Alabama's offensive line,
A&M's defensive line,
and then the ability to contain Johnny.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. The Texas A&M's defensive line, even though the defense as a whole was missing starters, I think that we saw with Rice, the running defense was going to be an issue early. But if they can't stop T.J. Yeldon, that's going to be very tough. I agree with you. That's definitely the matchup to watch. Now then, after College Station is done, you will be headed to Austin to find out what happens. And it will be a very interesting point for Texas's football program, for Mac Brown this season. Manny Diaz relieved of his duties after the 550 rushing yards allowed to BYU in a loss in week two. And now they face Ole Miss, and, you know, the Ole Miss looks really, really good. They move up tempo just like BYU, and they are great on the ground just like BYU, and arguably Bo Wallace, you know, even better through the air than Taysom Hill was.
Yeah.
You know, what is your forecast for the Longhorns? Do you think that relieving Manny Diaz of his duties did anything?
Well, I think it was a panic move, first of all. You know, if you're going to do something like this, just go through the season. You might as well. You do this after telling everybody in the offseason, we're better, we have a chance to win every game, we're better defensively, and then you give the guy two games. Now, admittedly, you know, Manny Diaz was head of the worst Texas defense statistically in the history of the school last year, and 550 rushing yards is mind-boggling. But now what you're telling, you know, what you're telling the team is, look, it's not on me, not on you, it's on him.
Right.
So, you know, so you have to get better, you know, automatically. They're bringing in Greg Robinson, the immortal Greg Robinson,
He did coach a pretty good defense in 04 at Texas.
He did. It was basically run out of town in Syracuse too. So
right,
that kind of balances it out. So I don't see things getting any better. Are they going to have? What you're saying is positioning. You know, they weren't lined up right. Well, I mean, I think it's a fundamental problem. I think now it's just a talent problem. When you're giving up 550 yards to BYU, which is offensively challenged, that's an issue. So, you know, they come out of that and they play Kansas State. It doesn't get any easier.
Mac Brown, as like you said, he was all over the place. He was at booster clubs. He was on TV. He was on radio. Mm-hmm. He was talking about how we are better. This is it. I think that Texas is in a position where we can win every game. And he blamed the struggles on what he said multiple times was a sense of entitlement throughout the Texas program. And if entitlement is an issue, then what I think that this move is confusing because, like you said, it's taking the blame off of Brown. It's taking the blame off of the players.
Right.
And the opposite of entitlement, in my mind, would be taking ownership for those mistakes.
Right.
With Diaz gone, is Brown on his – I mean, this is pretty much it for him. It's either going to be win or he's out in Austin?
Well, you can't fire too many more people.
Right.
He changed coaches, a bunch of coaches a couple of years ago, and now he's fired his defensive coordinator. It's getting pretty close to him. All that being said, he still has – until further notice, he still has – the support of the key people there. Now, that may have changed. Joe DeMail, who's a billionaire supporter. He's got about three statues on campus. DeLoss Dodds, the AD. But look, things in this business can change from week to week. And I think the next thing to look for is the Oklahoma game at Texas. If they get smacked around again like they did last year. This team cannot tackle. I mean, that's what we're seeing. That's it. They fundamentally can't tackle. Then, you know, what I still think Texas will ride out the season with them. But I think, you know, like I said at the beginning, the two biggest stories are these openings at these mega programs. I think everybody just assumes it now.
Let's go right there. You mentioned Oklahoma. Where are you sort of placing the teams in the hierarchy of the Big 12 right now? A couple things that stand out to me from the first 2 weeks of the season. Oklahoma cannot get the quarterback play together. We now know Blake Bell will be the starter in the third game, but Trevor Knight didn't look great. Oklahoma State seems to have finally found something with J.W. Walsh. TCU loses Casey Paulhall for at least 8 weeks, likely. And Texas Tech has a preferred walk-on who looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the entire conference. Who are you thinking of as the Big 12 contenders right now?
Well, I said at the, I'll just stick with what I said at the beginning of the season, that I thought very shakily that I thought that Oklahoma State would come out on top. Now, again, this is a conference where six teams got first-place votes in the preseason poll. So that could change overnight. But you're right. It does kind of slant now towards Oklahoma, I guess, and Oklahoma State. Don't sleep on Baylor.
Oh, sorry. I forgot. I've got Baylor as my highest-rated team in the Big 12 right now. Defense still needs to play somebody, but Bryce Petty is running that offense as good, if not better, than either of his two predecessors.
They're scoring way more than 2 points per minute of possession, which is, for people who don't know that, that's really, really high. Not per game. You have to measure it by per minute of possession. And I think they're way over 2 points. You see what the scores of their games are. And they probably won't be challenged until next month when they go to Kansas State. They've got a bye week this week. Then they've got Louisiana Monroe at home, West Virginia at home. Then they go to K-State. We've seen K-State isn't great. And then they have Iowa State. And then they're in Kansas. I mean, I think Baylor could be – I mean, depending on how things shake out, they stand a beat, they could be a top-10 team by the end of October. And I'm not saying they're going to see it or anything. I'm just saying their schedule shakes out that way. And like you said, they could be the favorite now.
I do think they're the favorite, and I think they will continue to be the favorite. I look forward to watching their home stretch, because if they're able to survive – a November/early December that goes Oklahoma, Texas Tech, at Oklahoma State, at TCU, home against Texas. I think if Baylor goes, Baylor could easily go 3-2 or 4-1 in that stretch, and I think 4-1 wins the conference.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And we may be looking at, 6-3 with a tiebreaker winning the league, or 7-2. I said that at the beginning of the year, that the champion might be 9-3 because it is so down this year. But I think Baylor would be a pleasant surprise in that they just plug in the quarterbacks there.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of them won a Heisman. They roll up yards. I just wonder where Art Briles' next job is going to be, because he's going to go somewhere. Maybe not right away, but he's going to go somewhere.
Is Art Briles' next job in Austin?
No. I asked about that today. They're not going to hire – Texas is going to look down its nose. They're not going to hire a Baylor guy. They're just not.
Would they go for Gary Patterson?
Pardon me?
Would they go for Gary Patterson?
I don't think – I mean, Gary Patterson or Chris Peterson leave. They're in too much of the comfort zone. Chris Peterson, who's been mentioned at both USC and Texas, Chris Peterson can't – barely stand talking to the two media beat writers at Coverham and Boise, much less the hordes he's going to have to deal with in L.A. or Austin. So I don't think that's not happening. And the same thing with Gary Patterson. He's got his own little fiefdom there making $3 million. Now, why bring that aggravation onto yourself? I might be wrong. I just don't think he'd – I don't think he'd go for that. I don't think he'd go for a rebuild. I think he's going to stay at TCU.
I go back to our colleague Bruce Feldman's Q&A with Chris Peterson over the summer, when Chris Peterson was talking about how much he disliked Mountain West Media Day. And to think that as Texas's head coach, I don't know the inner workings of the Longhorn Network, but I would imagine that you pretty much have media availability every single day in some way, shape, or form at Texas because of your Longhorn Network contractual obligations.
That's a great point, and one I started thinking about today, because Mac Brown hates it. He hates it. I mean, he flat out hates it. I mean, unless unless the new guy comes in and has something written into his contract that says he doesn't have to, you know, spend so much of his time with the Longhorn Network. But that's kind of the point. ESPN's paying for all that access, and they're going to want whoever that coach is. They want the practice open so they can film it and broadcast it live. So, or parts of it. So, yeah, I think that's a big thing to think about when you're coming in there.
Which potential open job? And I hate that we're saying this in September, but it is a pretty good transition and a relevant question as we talk about the Longhorn Network. Which job is more attractive in your opinion, Texas and everything, all the positives that come with being the head coach at Texas, but also the negatives, or Southern Cal? Which job is more attractive if it's open after the season?
It's hard to pick. I mean, USC is a private institution, but it operates like a public school, so that's not even a difference. Texas has so much money, but they both lay in the middle of ripe recruiting grounds. I hate to be this way, but I'm just going to call it a push. I can't really pick which one is best. They're both. Pete Carroll proved how valuable, how big that program can be, and Mack Brown in 15 years, look what he's done. So they can both reach the height.
Well, let's, like I said, it would be a nice transition going to the Pac-12, where Oregon, it seems to be, is off to another fast start. They really, in my opinion, won't be tested until they go against Washington. Have you seen anything from the Ducks that, you know, has you believing that they could potentially go through the regular season undefeated? And if not, is there any team from the Pac-12 that has stood out to you? I watched Stanford's debut, and while San Jose State was an 11-win team a year ago, very different this year, I still think there was a lot of areas where Stanford potentially could improve. But, you know, David Shaw, one of the best in the business. I'm just wondering, is there a team that could go through the Pac-12 undefeated?
Either Oregon or Stanford. I mean, that was the case before the season. You know, in their game at Stanford on November 7th, they decide who goes undefeated. You know, they were ranked both in the top five. I don't see any difference in Oregon at all. They still run the same plays with the same players at maybe even a faster pace, if you think about it. I will find out in the future how good a recruiter Mark Helfrich is. But he's just taken over, you know, it's like his duty not to screw up.
Yeah.
You know, there it is. You've got the keys to the car. Just don't crash the Lamborghini. And we've seen these first 2 weeks how lethal they are. So, no, and Marcus Mariota, how about him for the Heisman? Yeah. No one's talking about them.
They should
I think
be.
That's a definite possibility, unless he splits votes with the Anthony Thomas. This is, you know, this team is, you know, it may be better than the last two. We'll find out.
I think it's very interesting that Oregon and Stanford, in my opinion, two teams that could stand on the same field as Alabama. And because of their success over the last 3 or 4 years, you know, that is the measuring stick in college football. But I wonder with Stanford having to play UCLA and Notre Dame, and Stanford's got a really tough schedule, and Oregon has to go at Washington. You know, I'm looking into the crystal ball, and I'm seeing two of the best teams in the country that might be missing out on an opportunity to play for the national championship just because of, you know, the way the schedule's broken down, the way everything seems to fall. I'm not positive if either Oregon or Stanford could go undefeated.
Well, I think the only other team that could in that discussion is probably Ohio State, and they probably should, given how far they are above everyone else. I know they have to play Michigan at the end, but you know, I think it's a situation where the nation's on a winning streak. Excuse me, 14 games. Miller's hurt, but I think he'll be back. But that would be the only time you can throw a blanket around those four teams, or those three teams, and one of them's going to play. Then play Alabama or whoever comes out of the SEC for the championship.
Yeah, whoever comes unless something drastic changes, right now it is not hard to imagine that Atlanta will once again be a sort of makeshift semifinal to the national championship, and it's trying to fill that other spot. Now, Dennis, Do you think, after watching Michigan against Notre Dame, that Ohio State would be able to beat Michigan on the last day of the regular season and then again in the Big Ten championship game?
Wouldn't that be fun? I just want it to happen. I just want it to be possible. I think that would be unbelievable.
I think it's likely.
I do too. And now that we mentioned Michigan, maybe win that division. I just want it to happen. I just, that spectacle at Michigan Stadium, the Big House, on Saturday night against Notre Dame, it was just a reminder how great that first game could be. And then to go to the Big Ten championship game and do it again, can you imagine that? I mean, it would be – I don't know why they don't do this every – well, I do know why. They're reconfiguring the divisions, which is probably why. But, yeah, I can't wait. I've written about it a couple of times. It's just – it just has to get here.
And in that case, if we did have national title implications on the line, it would not be like the Pac-12 or Stanford and UCLA. Their first matchup was kind of a wash, and you roll over to save some of your players because it was already set in stone.
Right.
With national title implications, Ohio State has to bring their best against their rival 2 weeks in a row if they want to be able to make it to Pasadena.
And one of the criticisms of a playoff, a full-scale playoff, was that, hey, Ohio State or Michigan rest their quarterback in the last game of the season because they know they're in a playoff. I don't think so. Not in this game. I don't think not ever. I don't think in a 16 team. It's too bitter of a rivalry. I was there, and I got a sense for it. I thought they talk about it all the time. Somebody had spread an Ohio State flag on the ground and put fake dog poo all over it.
Are you sure it was fake?
Yeah, I did. I asked him. I saw it. I didn't smell it, but I could tell.
Okay.
And the souvenir stands, they're doing a brisk business for worst state ever shirts, and it's just got the outline of Ohio. It's just, and this is the second week of the season already talking about this.
It's going to be fun. All right, I'll send you out of here on this one. We covered, obviously, a lot of the Texas A&M, Alabama, a lot of what's going on in the Big 12 with Texas, a little bit about Oregon, Stanford, the Pac-12. What is a story that we've not mentioned here that listeners should sort of keep an eye on as we move forward and as the season sort of unfolds into late September?
Oh, wow. Well, I think we may have covered them all. You kind of caught me flat-footed. Maybe the Heisman race. I think it's a little bit more wide open than people thought. I don't think Johnny Manziel's going to win it. Like I mentioned before, I think Marcus Mariota now has a really good chance when people start to see what he can do. He's a great dual-threat quarterback. Some of the award winners like that. I think the resurgence of the ACC, and I mentioned this in a column on Sunday, he's got three in the top 12 or 13 right now with Miami beating Florida. Let's give him a little credit. We're used to running down the ACC. Florida State and Clemson are really good. We know they're good. October 19th at Clemson may decide, who makes the championship run. But, has Miami turned the corner? For God's sake, Duke and Maryland are 2-0.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
They're not the whipping boys anymore. Let's wait and see how the ACC shakes out this year.
I agree with you on that one. That should be fun. The best thing that could happen for that conference is for the matchups between the best teams, which, like you said, you've got Florida State and Clemson, but then you've also got that Florida State-Miami game. I mean, there could be some really, really good football between some top 25 caliber teams, and as long as those games deliver, because with ACC's ESPN contract, they'll be on national television. Now they just need to be able to deliver the level of play that deserves that kind of spotlight.
Right, absolutely. And, deserving. I thought, if a program that – Miami's a program that has suffered long enough, no matter what you think of what's happened there. They have suffered, and there are a lot of innocent people there right now just waiting for the verdict to come down, playing some great football.
He is Dennis Dodd. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. Make sure that you subscribe to the Eye on College Football podcast on iTunes. Our next episode will be the Expert Picks podcast, where I'm sure we will make fun of all of Dennis's picks behind his back when he's not on the line to be able to defend himself.
I need to do it behind my back. I do it in front of my back every week.
All right. For Dennis Dodd, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for tuning in.